Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRue Show. It's Saturday, October 29th, 2011. This is Marcia Mary Baker. Our topic today, as you may see from the website, is "The System is Dead. Don't Let Obama Kill Again." I'm going to announce our guests. I'm also saying I'm filling in for Harley Schlanger, who at the last minute is up to something else today, very useful. And he will be on next week, that's November 5th, interviewing Helga Zepp LaRouche. But now we have to discuss our current situation. Claudio Celani, we welcome you. Hi, Claudio.
Hi, Marcia.
And Claudio is speaking to us from Wiesbaden in Germany, from the sister publication for the Executive Intelligence Review for EIR Online. And I can say you're our special correspondent for Italy as well as other things, right, Claudio?
Yes, I think it's a fair description.
Okay.
Modest but fair.
Modest and accurate. And I'm very glad we have on the line from here at home base from EIR Online Counterintelligence. Welcome, Jeff. Jeff Steinberg.
Hi, Marsh.
Hi.
Hi, Claudio.
Now, for our... as I said, the system is dead. Don't let Obama kill again. What we're referring to is the fact that we're going now hour by hour into worsening danger and increasing harm for millions of people because we have a dead monitor system on our hands, but we're continuing it without reorganization, without, you can call it bankruptcy reorganization, without putting to death the worthless, monetarist valued betting debt and other debts and going for a new credit system. So what we've got is the continued, the imperial financial networks that brought us to this point are still continuing in charge, namely through such figures and networks as operating through the White House, with Barack Obama still there instead of being humanely put aside through impeachment or through resignation. And so he's been a functionary of the kind of networks as I described, the British, best described as British Empire networks. And what we've got is the threat of, you can call it a threat of world war, that it's an active threat. It isn't just a potential. You've had a trigger point, a threshold point being crossed with the murder of, with the treatment of Gaddafi, his son, with the other foreign policy by murder actions from Washington, D.C., from the White House. So this kind of dynamic is just part of the whole situation we have where this is playing out at a time when, in any case, no matter what the kind of psycho persona of Obama is, the preconditions have already been there in the terms of the monetarist devolution and the economic breakdown for the fact that we're in a shift point. We either shift into a new realm of potential for the United States and the world with credit system for the kind of projects needed and away from warfare is the only recourse, or we are headed down the path for war. Now, here's what we're going to do. Jeff Steinberg has more to say on this, both strategically and specifics, but for time constraints, Claudio Celani, who's based in Europe, we want to take advantage of he has another appointment this evening. We want to take advantage of his firsthand report of the situation in Europe, where we've seen the headlines, the transatlantic and international headlines, of these continuation of meetings about a so-called rescue effort. But Claudio, will you describe the conditions there?
Well, the conditions are desperate, because you must consider that on Thursday morning, the European leaders announced that they had rescued the euro, and thus rescuing the international, the global financial system. So this rescue lasted one day, And on Friday, the markets were already collapsing, and especially one very dangerous indicator was that Italy borrowing costs for 10-year bonds raised for the first time above 6%, which is very close to the unsustainability threshold. Now, we are talking about movements on the financial markets, which on one side have a mid to long-term effect, but on the other side have a immediate effect in terms of generating runs on banks, on sovereign bonds, etc., so that any such development could trigger a chain reaction collapse. So so we have now a situation where after they announced that they had rescued the euro 2 days ago, now European leaders in these hours, they are negotiating a new safety net between the European Union and the IMF. So in other words, the European Union has, in the last 12 months or more, they have generated one rescue package after the other, and they have announced to have rescued the global financial system each time, only to realize after 1 or 2 days that they were behind. Therefore, they should come out with a new rescue package. So we are here now in the mid of a global financial collapse, and these people are running behind events. Now, there are some ominous aspects to the last rescue package which show that European leaders are ready to go for outright fascism, economic fascism, but also political fascism, totalitarian regimes. Maybe we can talk about it.
Yes, why don't you go ahead? And that's the realm of for people to know. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, from the United States, looking at Europe looks a little bit weird because we have 17 countries who have decided to surrender economic sovereignty and to give up their monetary and credit system to adopt a common currency. Now, the European Union is behaving like a government with a currency, but has no government. There's no central bank, nothing. And instead of realizing that this has to be changed and to go back to national sovereignties, European leaders are in a flight forward, building up a supranational state. And in order to do this, they have to eliminate democratic systems. There's no way they can build a supranational democratic system. So they are destroying national democratic systems, and they are introducing a supranational dictatorship. And they are doing this step by step, violating their own treaties. So the latest move in this direction has been done at the last summit, the last Euro summit, where they decided that from now on, the Euro system, which is this system of 17 countries, will have a prime minister and will have a special commission which will meet every month. And this commission is composed by technocrats, and they will prepare all the summits, and this apparatus will have right to examine national budgets before national parliaments can do this, and they have the power to establish protectorates on countries who don't run their budget according to European rules. And one of these protectorates has been established on Greece. They are discussing about sending foreign officials to Greece who take over government functions, and the first steps towards such sort of protectorate has been taken now towards Italy.
Which one? What did they do on that, Claudio?
Well, they started last August by having the ECB, the European Central Bank, which is a bank, you know, it's a non-governmental organization, it's an NGO, you know. Forget about, if you have the Federal Reserve in mind, forget it. This is no such a bank. The Federal Reserve is a lender of last resort, you know, works together with the government. This is a non-governmental organization, which by statute cannot do what the Federal Reserve does. It cannot be a lender of last resort. But nevertheless, they have been acting as a real government, dictating policy secretly to governments. And in August, they took a step by writing a letter to the Italian government demanding a detailed list of measures which the government should take, a very detailed list of measures as if they were the government. So they, this was correctly described as a diktat. And this was not enough. They were not happy with the government introducing a budget cut for 40 billion or more than 40 billion. And now they wanted that the Prime Minister of Italy goes there, and this is what happened this weekend, goes there with another document where the government establishes a precise timeline or deadlines for implementing all the measures which the ECB wants. And these are all neoliberal measures, budget cutting, deregulation of labor laws, pension reform, which means cutting the pensions, extending the retirement age for men and women, laying off public employees, state employees, and so on and so forth. And at the last summit, at the last Euro summit, which ended up in the night between Wednesday and Thursday, they drafted a final document where it said that the European Commission will monitor, from now on, will monitor every step that the Italian government will do. So it's a beginning of a protectorate.
And Claudio?
Yes.
You know, this is really quite stunning, because what you're describing in the case of Greece and what they're trying to do to Italy is what the European colonial powers used to do in the Third World in the 19th century. It reminds me that in the 1880s, when Egypt was on the verge of defaulting because they couldn't pay their debt because of usurious rates and other things, the French and the British actually installed ministers to run the Egyptian government in receivership. Now, it sounds like they're trying a colonial policy on countries within Europe itself. And I mean, Greece may very well succumb under pressure, but the idea that Berlusconi and Tremonti and Bossi are going to succumb to this in Italy, you know, these are old foxes. It's hard to conceive that this thing is going to simply be pulled off. And, you know, it sounds to me like we're headed for a humongous kind of brawl and blow up in the immediate days ahead. I want to get your take on that.
Well, you know, this is true, because the persons you named, the prime minister, the economy minister, and the junior partner in the government coalition, who is Bossi, the head of the Lega Nord, these people know that if they implement this austerity, they're going to be smashed by their voters. On the other side, Prime Minister Berlusconi knows that if he doesn't implement this austerity, they will smash him with intelligence operations. He's under blackmail. You know, he has a whole machine, intelligence machine, which has been deployed against him, exploiting his weaknesses, but he's under blackmail. He has a lot of trials on his head. And so what they are doing, they are stretching this thing out. They're using the usual tactics by, you know, promising things vaguely, then doing them halfway in order to survive a little bit longer. So in a certain way, they are resistant. And the head of the Lega Nord, Bossi, said to in the cabinet meeting that they realized that the European Union wants to destroy the Italian government. And therefore, he said, let's play this game, but let's not play it like in a war. Let's not go out on a field battle, because we will lose. Let's play it as a chess game. So that's what they are doing. They are gaining time.
And Claudio, let me ask you, I saw one of your colleagues, Dean Andromedis's report filed from Greece. There were demonstrations all over Greece today, I understand. Again, what I'm saying specifically against the being a protectorate under the EU. I think it was the anniversary in 1940, resistance to have Mussolini put military bases in Greece.
Right.
But it turned at Thessaloniki and other places, it turned into a resistance, a statement of resistance against just what you're describing.
Yes, exactly. I mean, you see in Greece what's going on. It's this thing is going to go either way. You know, either the government is overthrown, or actually there is evidence that the European Union is working to turn this popular protest in Greece in something violent, and with usual gang counter gang schemes,
mm-hmm.
with the aim of establishing a dictatorship. I mean, let's not forget, Greece had the military dictatorship in the 60s, in the 1960s. So the question is you know, the people who are going on the street, they need a leadership. And they need a leadership in Greece, and they need a leadership also in Italy. In Italy, there was a strong reaction from the trade unions. So Italy is being put under the protectorate, at the beginning of a protectorate like Greece. And we see the beginning of a reaction like in Greece. In Italy, you have three trade unions who were split until yesterday, along, moderate lines and leftist lines. And now they've been united in a reaction against the diktats from the EU, against the protectorate idea. And they are now threatening a general strike. So we are going into the same direction. The question which we have to state very forcefully is that we see the total collapse of institutional leadership in all these countries. Even the trade unions, they protest, but they don't have a program, which we are. The LaRouche movement is the only movement which has, a leadership and a program. And we are telling the people, first you have to go for a stop to the bailout of the banks. No taxpayer money, no taxpayer cent must go any longer into bailing out banks. And the way to do this is Glass-Steagall,
mm-hmm.
or the equivalent forms of Glass-Steagall, which were traditionally there in European countries. And secondly, or at the same time, we have to dissolve this monster called the euro. So, and on this, there is a big debate. The biggest debate is in Germany. Germany is debating now Glass-Steagall, or Trennbanken, as they call it. And of course, they're also debating leaving the euro. Now, on this, I have to say two things. French President Sarkozy, who is the force which has pushed most for the bailout schemes, Sarkozy has been acting as the tool number one of the banks, of French banks, of British banks, of American banks. So he has pushed all these schemes after another. And if it was not for some resistance from Germany, we would have already now the ECB printing money for the European bailout fund. We would have already now a bailout fund turned into a bank, like Goldman Sachs was turned into a bank overnight, and having unlimited access to ECB funds. So we would be now much, much further in a hyperinflationary policy. Now, Mr. Sarkozy, after they announced to have rescued the euro on Wednesday night, Thursday morning, he went back home and he gave a long interview to French TV prime time. That's the day after, the evening of the day after. So after in this long interview, he boasted we have saved Greece because we, in order to save Italy, which is a much bigger problem, and thus saving the euro. And we have, having done this, we have saved the whole financial system. And then he was asked about Glass-Steagall. So the interviewer asked him whether what Sarkozy thinks about the debate in Germany about separating banks, the commercial banks, deficit banks, from investment banks. And he said that he opposes this. He said that he's against. He said that in his view, the model of universal banks should not be touched. So there you have it. That's exactly the problem we have.
You know, Claudio, one of the other things I think that's important to realize is that, you know, commercial banks issue loans beyond what they have on reserve on deposit. But the assumption is that you're making legitimate loans to the real economy and that you're doing a certain amount of assessment to determine the viability of the company you're loaning to, ability to pay back. This leveraged fund is basically bailing out worthless paper. You know, it was one of my contacts who I spoke with this week in Washington said, you know, what part of default don't they understand in Europe? The agreement is that there's going to be a 60% default on the Greek sovereign debt. And that's what's being sort of shoved down the throats of the bondholders. It's partly Germany's condition for writing the check on this bailout swindle. That's a default. You know, the European system is bankrupt beyond repair. And the same is true in the United States, at least of the big six Wall Street too big to fail banks. They're all tied up in, you know, attempting to bail out what is absolutely already completely worthless debt. So, you know, this thing is beyond repair. And that's really, I think, the danger here, that they're trying to preserve bankrupt banks and a financial bubble of gambling debt that's, you know, out of proportion with anything that's ever been seen before.
Yes.
Right. I think, Claudio, you certainly, both of you have now described the kind of transatlantic condition for moving on to what I'm going to ask you, Jeff, about the war danger, and no mincing of words here. But, Claudio, do you want to state anything to finish, or does this...
Yes, actually, I wanted to come to this subject because, you know, Mr. Sarkozy is the same guy who has led the war against Libya. So there is a very direct, precise connection. They are building empire, and they are organizing wars. You know, we have had a complete reversal of what was the strategic policy of the United States and of the European powers under Roosevelt, under Eisenhower, under Kennedy, when the United States worked to defend nations from old European empires and colonial powers. And now this thing has been reversed by Obama. Europeans are really astonished, are really stunned by the fact that the United States have given the blanco check to the French and to the British to do what they have done in Libya. You know, if you compare this to what Eisenhower did in 1956, by intimating the Anglo-French fleets to turn back and go back home when they were set to invade Egypt. It's a complete reverse of policy. Now, I think the French are being cheated by the British on this, because the British have a chaos policy, and the British have a planetary policy. The French think that they can get part of Libya, part of Africa, in this global scheme, but I think they are being cheated. Yeah, but this is the other side of the coin. No, the collapse is coming. These people are trying to put up schemes and saying that everything is fine, but they are organizing wars.
Well, I think that's it. And that's what I think Mr. LaRouche had the occasion. He just spoke, by the way, to a conference in San Francisco on the fact the world's on the brink. The civilization is on the brink of destruction, but unless we make the policy shift and go towards the Pacific Alliance. But in reply to a request from a Russian media source, LaRouche stressed just what you're saying, Claudio, in the last 12 hours. He's provided a written reply. And I think your point's clear. Would like anything else you want to say, or if you have to go, that's okay, but Jeff will continue on the topic. Is that all right, Claudio?
Well, yes, just one, you know.
Please.
Not to give a too gloomy picture, because we are organizing the resistance, and happy development was that the Constitutional Court of Germany yesterday put a stop to the European the supranationalists by intimating the German government basically to dissolve a super committee which was a secret committee that was set up to in order to bypass the parliament in decisions to finance the bailout fund. And this has very similar aspects to what has been done in the United States for the budget, the super Congress, as you call it, the super committee, right?
Yes.
So the Constitutional Court said that this is unconstitutional, and so they have now to find other way and means. And this is important because it slows down the process. The idea was that once they set up this super bank or super leveraged bank with a printing machine, they could take decisions in real time, and they don't need to convene parliaments or even parliament committees to have an approval. So this was stopped, and if you slow down the process, then the machine is no longer effective.
Right. Yeah, that's good. No, it's not a done deal. I'm glad you reported that. Thank you very much, Claudio.
You're welcome.
Okay, Claudio Celani, thank you. And we're continuing on the October 29th, 2011 LaRouche Show, and with Jeff Steinberg here now with us now. And Jeff, you've been in touch with Mr. LaRouche, but this aspect that Claudio was talking about Mr. Sarkozy and others, the kind of desperation context that's at play here. But there's also the deliberate classic British Empire manipulation, including people can think of it geographically, strategically, from place to place, Syria, other places that are being focused on as flashpoints for literal war, right?
Yeah, well, you know, the problem that you run into is that all of these scenarios that presume that you can have limited wars and controlled wars, particularly in the context of this kind of a total collapse of the entire transatlantic financial system, is really ridiculous. What we're really facing here is a very dangerous context where the provocations of these controlled limited wars can very easily lead to a world war. And, you know, even look from the terms of reference at the so-called limited wars that they're attempting to pull off. The United States, Britain, and France prevailed on Russia and China to abstain from a UN Security Council resolution to provide humanitarian protection, including a no-fly zone, over Libya. the intent of the British, the French, and the Obama administration from the very outset was a regime change, and as we saw in the last few days, of necessity, the assassination of Gaddafi. Why? Because if Gaddafi was ever put on trial, whether in The Hague or in Libya, the list of character witnesses that he would call, the list of secret treaties he struck, particularly with the British and with the United States, would have been an enormous embarrassment. His first character witness, unquestionably, would have been Tony Blair, the so-called peace negotiator for the Quartet. And he would have had a long list of American officials, including Condoleezza Rice, Joe Lieberman, John McCain, Lindsey Graham. So this was a regime change by NATO that involved from the very outset a premeditated intent to assassinate a head of state. Now, you could say that the day he was assassinated, he was no longer head of state because the transitional government was recognized. But the point is that there's nothing in the NATO charter that authorizes regime change against a country that has posed no security threat to any NATO country. So we're already in a strategic situation where war on a global scale is something that we are right on the edge of. If you noticed recently when the U.S. and Britain and France began moving in the same direction against Syria that they moved against Libya, both China and Russia aggressively vetoed the resolution, and a number of other leading countries, including India and Brazil, I believe even Germany, abstained. So what you're getting here is not even the fig leaf of cover of NATO or the United Nations, but an intention for a series of wars in which the U.S., Britain, France, and Israel will be involved. Syria is targeted, Iran is targeted. We're on a state of borderline war, hot war, with Pakistan already. So you get the picture here. You have a complete Hitlerian renegade phenomenon, and it's driven by the fact that aside from all of the BS that they put out midweek after this European heads of state summit about how they've solved the problem, these guys know damn well nothing's been solved. The situation is as bankrupt, if not more so now, than it was back a week earlier. The United States is hopelessly bankrupt, and Obama is going for dictatorship. You've had a series of assassinations of American citizens, and if people were confused about the assassination of Anwar al-Awlaki, because, quote-unquote, well, gee, he really was a bad guy. How do they explain the fact that a 16-year-old son was assassinated, who has basically no record of any kind of affiliation with any Islamist organization, an American citizen, and so...
And it wasn't collateral damage, which has no excuse anyway.
No,
it was later on targeted on a different at a different day.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what you've got here are all the makings of a Hitlerian war policy to cover for the fact that the financial system, the British Empire system, is hopelessly bankrupt. Now, Lyndon LaRouche has been saying for a hell of a long time that what you're dealing with in Obama is somebody who has the psychosis of an Emperor Nero, but who is also completely controlled from London, that he's a British agent, he's been a British agent all along, and we're seeing exactly this spectacle now play out, beyond anything that even Bush and Cheney could have gotten away with when they were in power. We were reviewing, in discussions with Mr. LaRouche this week, the evidence and some of the background and mechanisms by which the British profiled and recruited and then advanced the political career of Barack Obama. And one of our colleagues reminded us that we had actually published an article by our Russia desk person, Rachel Douglas, back in 2008 on British strategy for provoking a major confrontation between the United States and Russia back then. And one of the things that we referred to was a March 17th, 2007 issue of the London Economist, which is really the sort of flagship propaganda organ and publication for the City of London, which is at the heart of the British imperial financial system. They had an article projecting 50 years into the future called the European Union at 100. But the important thing is that the main issue in the article was a focus on the period around 2010, 2011. They laid out a scenario. They said, first of all, the U.S. will go through a complete financial meltdown as the result of the housing bubble blowing. Secondly, Barack Obama will be president of the United States. Now, this was in March of 2007. I'm not even sure that Obama even had formally announced his intention to run for president. He'd only been elected to the U.S. Senate a couple of years earlier. And, you know, there was no basis for making such a forecast were it not for the fact that the British were working through assets like George Soros to make sure it happened, as well as control over the American media and other things. And so what they said is, well, what's going to happen is Obama's going to come in as president. Russia is going to have a third presidential term by President Vladimir Putin, and Putin will take aggressive measures against the Ukraine, and the United States, at the behest of Europe, will step in with the threat to use nuclear weapons against Russia if they go any further against the Ukraine. Now, I go through this because what this is indicative of is a certain both outlook and intent. And the outlook was informed by the fact that the whole damn global financial system is finished. And if it goes down, and Mr. LaRouche's policy of a reinstatement of Glass-Steagall, a bankrupting of Wall Street and the City of London, an establishment of a sovereign credit system in the United States, which is then replicated in major countries around the world, and we go for serious global development, then we will have fulfilled Franklin Roosevelt's oft-stated intention during the early years of the 1940s, once World War II had broken out, that the United States was going to play the central role in defeating fascism, Nazism, and the Japanese imperial system, and that the post-war world would be defined by Roosevelt's outlook, not by a restoration of European and British, especially, colonialism. Under those circumstances, basically, you were going to have a world of sovereign nation states in which the European colonial empires were fully dismantled and went out of business. You'd still have a United Kingdom. It would be a sovereign country like any other. France would lose all of its colonies as well, Belgium, the other European colonial powers, and we'd have a very different world. Now, that's what's on the table right now. Lyndon LaRouche is speaking to exactly the FDR policy. The British Empire is flat on its back because the entire post-Bretton Woods, post-FDR financial system is hopelessly bankrupt. And what do empires do when they're confronted with an existential threat to survival? They go to war, and the wars very rapidly evolve into world wars. So that's the danger. And what Mr. LaRouche said is that there is a simple recipe for how to avoid war. The unavoidable first step is that Barack Obama must be removed from office, and it's got to be done constitutionally. He's done a whole series of things that represent impeachable crimes, starting with the murder of Anwar al-Awlaki and then his son, another American who was killed in another one of these drone attacks in Yemen. The war itself in Libya was done without any congressional authorization. a clear violation of Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution. And the list goes on. And so there are now members of Congress, Ron Paul, Kucinich, John Conyers, who are saying these are impeachable crimes. So let's get on with it. Let's see if somebody in Congress actually has the guts to draw up an official bill of impeachment. And let's see how the American people respond to that. Once Obama is out, and you could also get Joe Biden to face up to the fact that the president is insane. He's an Emperor Nero. And under those circumstances, very simple. Invoke Section 4 of the 25th Amendment, which gives the vice president responsibility on behalf of the country, on behalf of the republic, to remove the president from office if he's either physically or mentally incapable of serving. We have a clear case here where Obama is mentally incapable of serving as president. All of the signs that Lyndon LaRouche saw back on April 11th of 2009, when he delivered an international webcast and identified President Obama as a Nero-like character, have now fully blossomed, and there's no mistaking just how right LaRouche was back in April of 2009. So that's where we're at. We have a choice here. Either we remove Obama from office, or this British puppet is going to get the world plunging very rapidly, much faster than anybody can imagine, into World War III. So that's the strategic implications of this existential moment that we've reached with the breakdown of the entire transatlantic financial and monetary system. And what that means is the death of the British Empire, unless we capitulate and give them enough rope to start a world war in which we're probably going to all go down.
Right. To continue that, Jeff, I think it couldn't be clearer what you're saying. Do you want to say anything about, so don't underestimate the apparatus, the figures, the capabilities, the kind of Royal Guard here with the Joint Special Operations Command? Do you want to address that?
Well, you know, look, there's strengths and there's also great vulnerabilities and weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a mass strike dynamic that has been underway in various parts of the globe. It really picked up here in the United States, even in the first 6-8 months of the Obama presidency, when you had thousands of people turning out at town hall meetings of congressmen opposing the Obamacare policy. This has taken various forms ever since then. You had tens of thousands of people surrounding the state capitol in Wisconsin protesting against moves to cut the wages and living conditions of state workers in that state. You've got more recent manifestations, even in the very ill-defined but highly charged Occupy Wall Street. These are all very rough manifestations of a mass strike in which people are saying the economy has not been solved. People's conditions of life, their prospects for the future have gone to hell. They don't like these wars. They don't like the Libya war. They don't like American citizens being assassinated by a secret White House committee with no transparency on what the hell is going on, clear violation of the constitutional right to due process. So all of these things are happening, and therefore, it's not automatic. It's not going to be an easy sell. There's a growing sense that Obama should be removed from office. And the problem is that some people don't see the immediacy of the crisis, and they think they can wait till 2012. Well, there's no prospect that this situation is going to hold until then. So, yeah, there's a police state structure that has been structurally put in place through this series of unitary executive policies that were begun significantly so under Bush and Cheney and have been intensified again under Obama. Obama campaigned for office on the grounds that he was going to shut these programs down. And in fact, he's built on them and expanded them, as I said earlier, way beyond anything that Bush or Cheney could do. You have drone warfare now. This is something right out of the pages of H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds. The idea that you can have these weapons that can fire from remote locations, death from the sky, this is not traditional warfare. So, yes, there's specialty units that have been created, the Joint Special Operations Command, for one, the role of the NORTHCOM, which is a military unit that has jurisdiction over Canada, the United States, and Mexico. All of these structural elements are in place. But at the same time, remember, it was active duty and retired military people who were among the most vocal protesters against the Bush-Cheney wars.
Yeah, so, by the way, do you want to, there was a letter recently against, is that right, from retired military officers?
A whole group that works with an organization called Human Rights First.
Okay.
Basically saying that police state measures have been written into the defense budget that are completely unacceptable. So, you know, back during the height of the Bush-Cheney period, some of the most vocal opponents of these moves for war and police state were active duty and retired military. I think that we're going to see a continuation of that same phenomenon and
right.
on an even grander scale. So I'm actually optimistic that under Mr. LaRouche's leadership, with our candidates' movement, our candidate slate of people who really are taking leading positions in a variety of critical areas of the country, that we can defeat this. But the starting point is you can't underestimate the level of danger, the imminence of a literally fascist coup and a World War III eruption, all driven by the factor of what's going on in the breakdown of the British Empire, the so-called international financial system, but it's really the system of the British Empire that's reached its end point.
Right. Let me just throw in here, I recommend to people, you know, what you're saying, Jeff, is everyone as individuals think what they're in a position to do. If you want to confer on this, certainly many of you know or have a special liaison with someone in EIR online, but the toll-free number is 800-278-3135. I think you have it, but it's 800-278-3135. And the kind of thing that the LaRouche Democrat candidate slate of six candidates around the country, the kinds of things they're doing, for example, today in Boston, there's an emergency town meeting hosted by Rachel Brown, who's running for office there. I mentioned earlier in San Francisco, Summer Shields, who's running in that Bay Area for Congress, he's being joined by Dave Christie, who's running in Seattle for Congress, and they're hosting a complete public meeting, but also engineers, constituency, different constituencies attending, part of the West Coast Chinese leadership community. So it's I'm just saying again in response to what you said, Jeff, is that this is the moment. We can't think that it's later or it can be postponed. The danger of war is present now. So again, you're listening to the LaRouche October 29th, 2011. We started for technical reasons a bit on a delayed basis today. But do you want to say anything in closing, Jeff?
Well, I think people must stay in continuing contact with the LaRouche Political Action Committee. The best place for immediate updates is the LPAC website, because we're now continuing to upgrade and have just a continuous flow of news updates, in-depth material, both on the nature of this crisis and the day-to-day, hour-to-hour fight, And also, the crucial thing is that Mr. LaRouche has laid out a 7-point proposal for how to turn around the collapse of the U.S. and world economies. And again, it all begins with removing Obama from office. We have a British agent who has the personality of Emperor Nero. This combination is the most grave and dangerous immediate threat to the survival of the United States as a sovereign republic. And if the U.S. goes down, the rest of the world doesn't stand a chance.
Right. And I'll just throw in here at the end, the Congress schedule, and we're not raising this because of lobbying as usual. That's the last point. But they are back this week, I think, Jeff.
Right.
And the Glass-Steagall Bill 1489, which is a stake in the heart of this whole, it's actually a dead system. So, but this is what has to be done. That has with 49 signatures in addition to Marcy Kaptur, so that's 50 co-signers. And of course, the issue isn't one that will go along and pace it or something. We are at the breakout point on that too. That is we can overwhelm the situation. We can, through everyone activating, and just the way you said, Jeff, that's the website, of course, is LaRouchePAC.com. So thank you very much, Jeff, and we can conclude October 29th, 2011, and I'll say again, Harley Schlanger will be interviewing Helga Zepp LaRouche. She's in Europe, and obviously the wife of Lyndon LaRouche, and that will be November 5th, next week. Thank you for being on.